Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where we discuss tips, tricks, and current topics related to all things in the blind and partially sighted community. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce the founder of Blind Beginnings and your host, Sean Marcellet, and whatever co-host is on this week. Now, here's your host, Sean.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. Thanks for joining us today. We have an exciting episode. We're talking to Ryan Fleury, who is someone that I have always thought of as a tech guru, but he's also a musician and songwriter. And our very own Rob Minot, communications coordinator for Blind Beginnings by day and music video maker by night. So welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
And also joining us is Sarah Minnell, who is the manager of live descriptive video from Descriptive Video Works.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So I want to start by asking Ryan, tell us a little about yourself, your level of vision, kind of who are you?
Who am I? Well, I had sight until I was 23 years old, and then in 1995 was in a car accident, which left me totally blind, so I have no sight at all. Since about 1997 was when I first got my first guitar from my uncle, who's a musician, and I've always had a desire to be involved in music. I sang in choirs in school and high school, and tinkered around here and there, but never really took it seriously until I lost my sight. And then, like I said, I got my first guitar, and I've just been kind of starting to write and sing for myself more often.
I want to make some joke about the blind stereotype of all blind people are musicians, because it's kind of funny that it wasn't until you lost your vision that you kind of started tinkering in that direction.
I think music is an outlet that many of us just seem to take to. Like, some people take to sports after they lose their sight. I was very active and athletic as a sighted person. And then after losing my sight, just really either A, didn't know blind sports was a thing, so never really got involved and fell back to music. So, yeah, it is interesting.
Was it challenging learning the guitar without your vision?
It's still challenging. I'm not a great guitar player. I can fumble my way around with a bunch of different chords and different tunings on the guitar. I'm a better bass guitar player than acoustic guitar player, or electric guitar for that matter. So it's a constant evolution of learning.
Okay, so today we're talking about the song that you've recently written called Make a Difference. But I'm just curious, before we get into that, I mean, have you written other songs in the past?
I have. I've probably written 8 to 10 songs. I have 6 or 7 recorded up on my YouTube channel at whitekinrecords.com, if anybody's interested. And, you know, it's always a work in progress. You know, I've always got lyrics that come to mind that I jot down on my computer. Just the other day, I grabbed my guitar and started coming up with a tune, and then dove into my computer, hit record, and started recording what I had. And that idea may never become a song, but at some point it might. So I try to jot down everything or record everything that comes to mind.
So I grew up doing, you know, piano and band in high school and choir, and I was really musical, but I've never written a song. What is the process? Is it like lyrics first and then a tune, or a tune and then lyrics, or both at the same time? How do you do that?
I think everybody's different, but for me, it's both. I can be just wandering around and a phrase will come to mind. So I write it down or record it. Or I could just be, you know, practicing scales on the guitar and kind of like a chord progression. And then I hit record again because I think that sounds kind of pretty. And at some point, you know, hopefully some of the lyrics I've written down will match up with some of the music I've recorded. But it's either or.
So you recently performed at an online event with this song that you wrote, Make a Difference. Did you write the song for that performance, or was the song already written?
No, the song was already written. I started writing Make a Difference in late 2018 and went through 2019, had other projects that I was working on and recorded. And then about 6 months before this Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians virtual concert came up, I had finished Make a Difference. And then when I was presented with that opportunity to submit something to that concert, I thought, well, this would be really cool. You know, it's an audience of blind and partially sighted people for the most part. How great would it be if we could make this a described video? And then that's when I reached out to Rob and said, can you try putting a video to this song?
So the idea to describe it came before there was actually photos or video images.
Yeah, I think so. I think because the audience was going to be blind and partially sighted, I thought it was going to be a great idea if I could get this done. And it all just came together in a really quick time frame. I had about 2 weeks turnaround time to get the video done from Rob and then over to Descriptive Video Works, who did the audio description for it, and then submit it to AEBC for the concert. So it's pretty amazing how quick it came together.
It's really an amazing video. So Rob, had you made music videos before?
No, this was my first music video. I had put together product related videos in a past life. So I had some video editing experience, but no, a music video like this, no, this is my first rodeo.
So, I mean, how did you guys go about picking the visuals to go with the lyrics? Like whose discretion was that up to? Did you do that together? How did you do that? It's amazing.
Take it away, Rob.
Oh, no. Yeah, Ryan just gave me pretty much just lots of rope. He just gave me the song and was just like, make a music video. So, you know, the process for me was like, and I loved the song. I listened to the song and I thought it was a great song. So I was excited right from the get-go. But I guess my process was, you know, and it is interesting too, because that's exactly what he said to me too. He's like, can you make me a music video? And I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds fun. And then he said, can you do it in 2 weeks? And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess. I remember sitting down that first night and I listened to the song like probably about 10 times in a row. And I just took a piece of paper and I started to write down words that came to mind in different parts of the song. And then what we had done is we had purchased a license for royalty free video clips. So I had this whole library of video clips to work with. And I just started to try to match these words with some of these clips that were there, that were available, and put together sort of a, what I called like sort of an emotional skeleton to the song. And sort of built that framework to start with, hitting, like trying to sort of evoke the emotions that the song was trying to do, whether it was through what was going on musically or what was going on through the lyrics. And, you know, some of it worked and some of it didn't. And, but, you know, getting that initial skeleton down and a feel for it was sort of the first step. And from there, it was just more of a refinement process. But I mean, you know, I showed Ryan, you know, probably a first draft within the first 4 days or so. And, you know, and he loved what I had done so far. So, you know, I took that as a green light that I was on the right track. But it was a little scary, to be honest, because I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm butchering the idea of what Ryan has pictured with his song. You know, I was very attuned to the fact that, you know, if I had written a song, I would feel very emotionally attached to it. So I, you know, in a way I felt really honored that he, you know, trusted me enough to sort of just put it in my hands and just give me free rein to sort of take it and do with it what I wanted.
So there wasn't initially any description. So did you just sort of like describe what you had in each part of the song for Ryan?
Well, I think what happened, well, I would send it over and he and his wife would take a look at it. So I imagine that Ryan, was that right? Like, so you guys kind of took a look at it and she kind of described what I had put down?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And when you saw that, because I mean, you said you started writing the song in 2018.
Yeah.
And when I watched the video, it's very much COVID.
It is.
Right. And so is that what you were thinking when you wrote the song?
No,
I mean, obviously not initially because there was no COVID yet, but like.
Yeah, no, I actually had to go back and rewrite some of the lyrics because, again, like the song wasn't finished until about 6 months ago. And, you know, just kind of looking at the reality we're all living in, you know, what Rob came up with as a video really kind of matched up with, I guess, the emotions I was trying to convey in the song.
Yeah. And I think that the reworked lyrics, because that was one conversation that we did have that, you know, he did say that, you know, he wanted the song to really tie into what was going on at the moment. So I was able to sort of take that direction and put, like, say, COVID specific things into it or Black Lives Matter things into the song to make it sort of topical because, you know, he did indicate that that was something that, you know, he wanted to express.
How many versions did it take before you kind of got all the images that you guys both liked?
You know, I think I sent Ryan a total of 4. But for me myself, like there was probably 20. Not radically different drafts, but there were just times when it just wasn't working. Like it's really interesting. I have to say, I really had fun editing this. And it was a unique experience for me because out of all the creative things that I've ever done, because, you know, I do graphic design, I do web design, I do some writing. But this was the first thing that I ever really sunk my teeth into it was really intuitive. Like I would put together a sort of a visual edit and I could tell immediately if it didn't work or if I didn't like it, or it was so much of an intuitive experience, because I think that when you're matching visuals to something like music, it's just so instinctual when it's working. So I was constantly like ripping stuff out and putting stuff in, or, you know, things weren't quite, you know, falling right at the right time musically, or things weren't falling right at the right time within the body of the lyrics. So I was constantly like sort of swapping in different clips and seeing what worked and what didn't. So yeah, I mean, I have probably like 20 drafts of the thing on my computer right now.
Well, and what's interesting too is, you know, you asked us about collaboration. We didn't really do much of that at all. And even Descriptive Video Works, the only time they became involved was when we had the video done. And I had asked Diane Johnson, the studio head over there, if they'd be willing to do the description for it. They'd never seen it. This was the first time I understand they've done something like a music video. And she was all over it, just absolutely just willing to take it on. So
that's so great.
Yeah. So that's where they brought Sarah in to write the script.
What kind of feedback have you received since the sort of release of the video?
Everybody who has seen it, not everybody has emailed me, but I have received emails. Everybody who has replied loves it, says it's powerful, it's emotional, it's timeless. The whole video, the descriptive track, and the song itself are, you know, some are actually calling a work of art, you know, a timeless piece. So it's really encouraging to me that something I created, and, you know, Rob added to and Descriptive Video Works enhanced, has resonated with people. It's emotional. I watch it probably a couple times a day, every day. And many times it still chokes me up. So I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, you should be. It's so well done. And it is very, well, I mean, for me, I grew up with a visual impairment. And when I was younger, I could kind of sort of see a little. And I remember being 12, 13, 14 when Much Music was like a big thing. Mm-hmm. You'd come home from school and watch music videos. And really, I had no clue what was going on in the music video, right? It was just, unless there was talking at the beginning or unless the movement was not like really dramatic. But most of the time, there's like lots of different visuals flashing throughout the song. and it just, I couldn't follow. So really, this is the first music video that I've ever experienced from beginning to end and known exactly what was happening. And that was amazing.
It's really interesting because on a previous interview I did, someone had asked me if music videos have ever been described before. And, you know, I did mention I did a bit of research, and Stevie Wonder partnered with WGBH back in 2005 on a song called So What's the Fuss? And so he has a described version of that as well on his Facebook page. I can send you the link to that if you like. And it's actually described by Busta Rhymes, who's a rapper from, I think, what, the 80s or 90s, people may remember. But there's not many others out there that I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah can speak more to this, but yeah, definitely a lot of challenges in trying to describe something when you don't want to step on the lyrics, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's what really amazed me when we got the described version back, because I was gobsmacked how they did it. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, to not only evoke the emotion that the visuals are trying to evoke, but doing all that while not stepping on lyrics, while not stepping on guitar riffs, you know, it's incredible. And so, you know, in a way, you know, it is kind of a minor miracle that it all came together like it did, because we weren't able to sort of sit in a room and collaborate all together and plan any of this stuff out. It was really three very distinctly different steps that, you know, everybody was able to contribute to make this one really special thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. With COVID especially, like, absolutely impossible for the three of you to sit in a room together and kind of go through the song, and for Rob to say, what about this visual here, and Sarah to comment on what she could say about it, and yeah, all of that, right?
Yeah, it would be really interesting. I have another song on my YouTube channel I've been contemplating getting Rob to put into the video together for, but it'd be interesting to actually, you know, do a Zoom meeting with the three different groups and actually discuss the project and work on the project, collaborate together to come up with something incredible. It'd be a whole different process.
I'm totally thinking of, you know, when you're watching a movie that's described, or TV show or anything, during there'll often be like a musical montage, and it always steps on the song, right? Like they don't seem to make any effort in those cases to not interrupt the song. And sometimes, like for musicals especially, there'll be a lot of dialogue over top of the actual music, which is kind of fun, and you know, the lyrics tell a story and it's part of the production. So I feel like, I don't know, this could be the beginning of a lot of changes maybe.
Well, we've talked about, you know, how difficult it must be to do something like a music video. Just the way my song came out left gaps between phrases where a describer could actually fill in the gaps and let you know what video was on the screen at that time. Some music videos and some artists, of course, you know, depending on the song and the spacing and timing, it would be really hard not to step over dialogue. And even the Stevie Wonder described video, you know, the Stevie singing in the background, there's people dancing, and, you know, the describer is still describing over Stevie's lyrics, but you can still understand what's actually happening in the video. So if it's done properly and tastefully, I think the two can coexist, but it's got to be tricky.
But I think that it does raise a good point. This is possible, and this is totally something that I hope going forward happens a lot more often. Because if you think about it, there are ASL interpreters, for example, who perform alongside, you know, rap artists or pop artists at big venue concerts. So why not this? I mean, this seems to be, you know, something that is totally possible.
Well, and we have live describers for live theater productions as well, right? So it's definitely possible.
Great segue to Sarah. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Nice to be here virtually from across the country of Canada.
Yeah, I love it when we can have guests from so far away. Mm-hmm. Can you start by explaining what is audio description?
Audio description is basically an audio description of visuals on a screen.
How long have you been doing audio description?
Oh my goodness, I've been doing audio description now for probably 12 or 13 years. In various formats, live, writing audio description, voicing audio description.
And I imagine there's a lot of differences between live and not live.
Yes, there is. The improvisational factor. Not live is definitely easier to be more precise in terms of what you want to describe and how you want to describe it, whereas live is much more just flying by the seat of your pants. And so it's about making quick judgments about what is the most relevant information.
Is that stressful?
It depends on the program. Oftentimes the producers of programs are very responsive to what we do. And so they provide me with tons of information. So I get scripts and breakdowns of how the show's gonna go. So I can go through all of those things and I can look for what I perceive might be the most important information. And then I can arm myself with a descriptive vocabulary that will help me throughout the production so that I'm not repeating myself and saying the same thing over and over and over again, because, you know, blind viewers need to be kept interested.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So had you ever described a music video before?
Yes, I had actually. Oh, I had described Descriptive Video Works is trying to branch out into the video game market. And so there was a launch of a music video for the video game Fortnite, which anyone who under the age of 13 is very familiar with, I'm sure.
Yes.
It was a music video connected to Fortnite. And so I did the description for that as a kind of way for Descriptive Video to move more towards video games, to make them more accessible.
So the process of writing, can you talk about how do you go about even starting? You get this video from Ryan's video, Make a Difference, and yeah, where do you go from there?
Well, I watch it and Ryan, it was great because we had tons of contact with him. So I was able to say, do you want me to name the musicians? Are these specific people who you want to have names? And he was like, no, I just want to keep it generic. So having that access is really helpful. There's many ways of going about it and it depends how I'm feeling, but I might watch it first and pick out what strikes me, or I might listen to it and not watch it. And that will allow me to find out where the gaps are. Mm-hmm. So that if I was a non-sighted viewer, what would I need? Or, because then when I watch it, certain things might be a complete surprise. I'll go, oh, I had no idea that was going on while there was the song. So that really helps as well, because then I can know what I'm missing and fill in those gaps.
Yeah, and we were just talking about not stepping on lyrics, which I feel like would be really challenging in a music video.
I really, really did my best not to step on lyrics. and my husband is a musician, so I also feel a bit bad stepping on the music.
Right.
But, for the purposes of audio description, something's got to give. There's got to be somewhere. So, in Ryan's video in particular, I really, really tried to stay out of any lyrics, and also because the lyrics were it's just so good that I didn't want to get in the way of those.
So I don't know, compared to the sorts of things you describe, was this harder, easier, equal?
I think it was challenging because there was so little room to describe things, and there were so many, music videos have so many different flashes of images that I couldn't get everything in. So it was challenging in that way. And when that happens, I have to try to just stick to what's happening on the screen at the time, especially if it's a non-linear, like a music video. So I can't go back and say things that have already passed. I just kind of keep going with what's in front of me in that moment.
I guess timing must be a thing, right? Because you're not the one actually reading what you've written. So you've got to make sure that what you write, the person who's going to actually do the reading can fit it in.
And so that's a lot of it too, is there's a lot of reading out loud. Reading out loud in a very calm, easy pace that if you're describing something to someone, they can understand. If there's too much information, then they won't understand anything. So yes, there's a lot of reading out loud.
Have you done all aspects of audio description? Like you do the writing, but have you also been the voice?
Yep, for sure. I just did Battle of the Blades last night. I wrote and described it in my studio here, and then I sent it to Descriptive Video Works, and they put it into the track. So, because the tech side, I'm not super savvy.
I would imagine it helps if you understand kind of the role from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And how your part fits in.
Yeah, it does. It does. And also the style of the show. So you have to write and pace yourself according to the style of the show. Like I've described everything from horror series to like silent children's series for 4-year-olds. So the description really has to fit within the genre, thinking about who the audience is who's listening.
Mm-hmm. A music video is very diverse. Like anybody could be watching.
Absolutely. Anybody could be watching. And also keeping it, you know, you don't want it to be rushed, and you want it to, the VO to be, the description to be in sync with the music. Mm-hmm. So there's bearing that in mind, which kind of happens automatically just as you're listening to it over and over and over again. We can't help but be influenced by what we're listening to and the music.
Well, you did a fabulous job.
Thank you.
The first music video I've ever been able to fully appreciate. So,
oh, great.
I loved it. Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, and Sarah, I thank you so much. The script rating that you provided to Diane, who did the description, you know, I'm being totally blind. I was saying earlier, I watch the video multiple times a day, almost every day, and it still chokes me up. And so, you know, it was an exceptional job you did. The timing, everything was great. I don't feel like I'm missing anything in that video. So thank you. Thank you again.
It was a lovely, did you shoot that during COVID?
Well, let's pass that over to Rob.
Well, no, actually, you know, believe it or not, like, no, those are all, we bought a license to stock video clips. You know, it's interesting that we all sort of had a very similar process. Of course, you know, at the beginning we had Ryan who wrote the song and then he passed it to me. And for me, I did something similar to you, Sarah, is that, you know, I listened to it like 10 or 12 times and I just started writing down words and ideas, but behind the music. And then it's such an amazing process because then you came in behind me and then were able to sort of translate back into words. But I find it fascinating that we were able to all work on this independently in different stages and for it all to come together in a way that just worked.
I can't believe you did that with stock footage. It seemed like it was really shot for the film, for the song itself.
Yeah, no, and that's why when you had asked, do I want anybody named? I was like, I don't know anybody.
Oh, because I was going to ask who the kids were.
Couldn't tell you.
Especially the visually impaired child. Yeah.
Couldn't tell you.
Oh, good job, Rob. Good job in syncing up images that so well supported the music.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Rob had mentioned in previous interviews that we've done was how they're in the video, they're the same character will appear, you know, multiple times, and how you, Sarah, and the describer kind of weave that dialogue, that narrative into the video that, you know, I don't think any of us thought would be picked up on. Like there's a guy talking on his cell phone who's angry, and then he hangs up and he's bobbing his head to music, and the elderly couple that look distraught when they're looking at their computer screen, and at the end they're celebrating dancing in the kitchen with their children.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I can't believe that you got that from stock. I honestly thought it was like it was shot. It was specifically chosen and shot for that. Wow. Well done.
I know. When I watched it the first time too, I was like, how did they get into a friendship center? Especially during COVID, like how did they get all these?
And some of the images, like even the one of the sort of party at the beginning, they were outside and people were kind of apart from each other. So I was like, oh, they're socially distancing. Should I mention that? Or is it, like, you know, it seemed like it had just been shot and we were all doing surviving COVID.
So what's next for you, Ryan?
Got
a lot more songs in you?
I've got lots of words written down and a couple tunes in progress. But my songwriting really comes and goes. Like I mentioned earlier, I started writing Make a Difference in late 2018, went through 2019, had a couple other projects I was working on, and then finished Make a Difference, you know, April or May of this year, 2020. So, you know, it's what moves me, you know, what inspires me at the moment. And I go off on that tangent. So, you know, I do have a couple other songs that I'm considering getting Descriptive Video Works to maybe describe and have Rob put videos together again. But, you know, I don't know when and I don't know how, but we'll get there. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're interested, Descriptive Video Works is doing, for the first time ever, we're describing the Macy's Parade on NBC.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's happening next week. So and that's kind of exciting in terms of, I don't think it's ever been described before. And I think the community has in the States has been asking for it. So I'm really looking forward to that.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And obviously that'll be live.
That will be live. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check that out. You guys are doing amazing work at Descriptive Video Works. We definitely appreciate. It feels like more and more programming is described now. And actually I've stopped watching anything that isn't because
you don't have to anymore. Oh yeah. It's so nice to hear that because so often you're, you know, in your little on your little computer writing your scripts and trying to decide, oh, should I say this or and, you know, and being very, very meticulous about what you're doing. And then on the other side, you're like, I hope someone's gonna, and then every once in a while we'll get DVW will get an email from someone who listened to the description with their mother who can't see or, and how much they enjoyed it. And that's really, I used to do description for theater, which was actually really, really rewarding because I could meet everyone after. Mm. And we would do touch tours before the show. And then I would meet with them all after. And it was very rewarding from my end to really feel like it was affecting someone and being listened to. It was such a great experience. So I hope theater and live music can come back very soon.
Yes. Well, in the meantime, know that the TV and video and all that stuff is making a big impact too. Like truly, it's so awesome to be able to watch a show and know everything that's going on without having to bother your friends or family to say what's happening and be a pest. So,
well, right. I think we're getting to a point too where, you know, Rob and I have discussed this a little bit, where audio description is very similar to listening to an audiobook in the background. You know, you can mm-hmm. turn that on and be doing the dishes or doing the laundry and still following your program.
I agree.
There are people who are not blind who use it as well, just because why not?
driving in your car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. I loved the video and it's been great to connect with you all and find out how it all came to be. As soon as I saw it, I just wanted to know more. How did you make this happen? And so amazing. So thank you.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Our pleasure. My pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sarah. And thank you, Sean, for having us.
Thanks, Sean.
You've been listening to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. If you have a question or comment, please send us an email at limitless@blindbeginnings.ca. See you next time.
For more information on Blind Beginnings and its mission to inspire and support children and youth who are blind or partially sighted and their families, visit www.blindbeginnings.ca.